"It's okay. He ran. And the others were already gone," he said, his voice rising with alarm. "And Malin and Vika, back with the old woman? They acted like they were really going to hurt her, Mom! And I hit that old man!" "And that's not okay," she said, stroking his blood-matted hair. "But we've all found out a lot tonight." "I wanted something to do," he said, voice faltering. "I've just been so sick of the store. I wanted some action. But this wasn't like going with the posses. This was wrong." Annalene just nodded. "Well, I'm glad to hear that." She released him and dried his eyes. "Did you tell all this to Ben?" she asked, placing the bandage.
"All of it."
"And?"
Jabe wiped his eyes.
"He said I should follow his advice for Orin, that I should turn back now. And he said that only a fool follows another fool."
Callie watched, mystified.
"Do you still think he's crazy?"
Jabe smiled weakly.
"I'm not one to judge."
Chapter 40.
Annalene had sat with her children until after midnight, comparing notes about what had transpired with Orin. Now that her exhausted kids had gone to bed, Annalene clutched her pillow against the breeze and tried to sort it out. So much news, so little sense. What Jabe had done was bad, yes, but she couldn't figure out Orin's involvement. He'd made the trouble Jabe was in sound darker than a botched prank. But if Orin needed untraceable money, he wasn't going to get it robbing Wal Obrick, who famously kept most of his fortune in all rhodium-plated ingots, buried somewhere underneath his septic system. So what were they doing out there? She looked for the seventh time at the chrono by her bed. It was her birthday now, and had been for 3.5 hours. Hours in which she hadn't closed her eyes except to cry. Her sparely furnished room lay more than a meter underground, with a high window cracked open to the outside. The smells from the livery, as pungent as they sometimes were, reminded her of her childhood home. But after the night's events, she just felt cold. She pulled at the brown fabric she'd been resting under until it was over her head. "Is my cloak comfortable?" Annalene looked out from beneath the makeshift cover. Backlit by moonlight, Ben sat perched in the open window. He wore the clothes she'd seen him wearing outside his house, the day of that first visit, and he looked grim. But she was glad to see him, even here, even now. Given his penchant for sudden appearances, this circumstance seemed almost normal.
"Hello, Ben,"
she said, sitting up. Belatedly realizing she was lying half-dressed under his cloak, she pulled it to her chin and blushed.
"Sorry,"
she said. "I guess you need this back."
No, you hang on to it."
Ben turned his head quickly, nearly hitting it on the ceiling above him. Annalene chuckled, her first laugh in hours. She had him look outside for a moment while she found her nightshirt.
"Crisis averted,"
she said, passing him his cloak as he slipped down to the floor.
"You must be exhausted,"
she said, watching his shoulders sag as he sat on the floor against the wall. She had almost forgotten that their day had started in the desert before Mos Eisley.
"I am tired. I've been very busy,"
he replied quietly, a respectful distance from her bed. In the hallway there was only darkness.
"I need you to listen," he said, "because I don't have much time."
He looked up at her.
"I know Orin was here."
Shifting to sit on her knees, Annalene nodded.
"He told you about the money he owed Jabba?"
Ben asked.
"And the bank?"
Annalene shook her head sadly.
"It's so much. I don't get how he came to this."
"It's about water,"
Ben said.
"A magical water that tasted better than any other. And the vaporators that produced it."
"You mean this?"
Annalene said, holding up the flask from her bedstand. She handed it to him. Ben didn't refuse it. He drank thirstily. Wiping his face, he continued, "You told me Danar had never developed the formula because of the cost, but that after Danar died, Orin invested heavily."
6 years ago, she said, nodding. Danar was gone. Orin's wife had left. He'd hit bottom. I think Orin decided it was the way to reclaim his life.
But success never came, Ben said. Orin's debts grew, and he took a loan from someone who really worked for Moset Benid, one of Java's business managers.
Orin told me,
Annalene said. He started selling things off, Ben said. I know because I just came from his office at his ranch.
Her eyes widened. Really?
Ben nodded. I figured he kept things there he wouldn't keep in his office here in the store. Then he looked up at her guiltily, although I checked there too.
But how did you get in?
Annalene squinted. She sighed, impatient.
Never mind. Go on.
Ben stood, still speaking quietly. Orin was broke, so he turned to a resource he had control of. A public trust.
Annalene gasped. The Settler's Call.
You told me there was once enough money in the fund to defend half the galaxy.
I wasn't serious,
Annalene said, reaching over to nudge the door to the hallway shut. And he was legitimately using the money to buy weapons and land speeders. There's that whole arsenal in the garages. But he also uses those speeders for his ranch, Ben said. And there are loans taken out on all the fund's vehicles. As for the weapons, they all came from your store. He wasn't exactly paying full price.
And my new land speeder?
Leased. The dealer wasn't supposed to tell you.
Figures.
Annalene's mouth twisted as she rolled her eyes.
So he's an embezzler. I guess I'm not surprised.
Ben paced back in front of the window, his shadow cast by the moon outside falling across the bed.
I'm afraid that's not all.
Orin could only rely on the Settler's Call for financing while the fund was flush. When the Tuskens were on the rampage, that was no problem. But 3 or so years ago, something happened.
I remember,
Annalene said. After the raid at the Lars place.
Yes,
Ben said, looking mysterious in the moonlight.
I've heard about that.
After that attack, something happened to the Tuskens. I'm not sure what, but it chilled the Sand People to their bones, and the attacks mostly